Sports Day for Kia's open season, continuing with match-winning deals and Red Energy, a 100% Australian gas and electricity retailer.
7 minutes past six. Welcome along to Sports Day. Gillon McLachlan, the CEO of the AFL, coming up shortly. But the M-word reared its head last Friday night when Caroline Wilson, for the first time, put mergers back on the agenda on Sports Day.
No, Jared, I more fear for 10 clubs in Victoria than I do the expansion clubs. And I think that, you know, a lot of the naysayers are starting to say again, you know, I know there's unity at the moment, but when you get club CEOs and footy bosses and presidents on their own, they question the wisdom of North Melbourne not going to the Gold Coast. They question the wisdom of Tasmania not aligning with an AFL club and becoming based in Tasmania. All these things are back on the table now.
And again on Channel 9 last night, she floated the potential idea. She doesn't make these things up, as so many people have alleged today. So clearly, some in high places have been brainstorming. Well, I'll give you a few other M-words to brainstorm. Misguided, malevolent, moronic, mischievous, and plain and simply mad. Yeah, pure madness to be putting this on the agenda again. Mergers are messy. And despite the success of the Brisbane Lions, it came at a serious cost. Not so long ago, it made absolute financial and football sense for the Kangaroos to move to Queensland as a relocation, just like the successful move of the Swans. But that bird has flown. So too is a move to Tassie, for the Tasmanians want their own team. Now, the Kangas have dug in, and they've dug in successfully, doing well at the moment in Melbourne. But they've made their bed, and like St Kilda, Melbourne, Bulldogs, and all other mid-range clubs in Melbourne, they will more than ever have to be financially independent in the new era of financial conservatism that is no doubt coming. No one knows what's around the corner, but for the men and women in high places to be throwing up mergers suggests to me they are not coping at all with their isolation. Footy's a business, we all know that, but primarily footy is a people's business, and mergers don't wash with a game's core asset. People. Welcome to you, Scoot.
Jared, good evening to you. Another strong opener, and we'll get to your exquisite use of the thesaurus later in the show. But first, I just want to clarify with you. So the madness that you're talking about of any talk of relocation and mergers, it's not from...
Relocation are different to mergers, but go on.
But you're talking them one and the same, are you not?
No, relocation is different to mergers.
I understand that. But so you're talking purely about mergers.
Mm.
Okay. But so any talk of which is madness? Is that what you're saying?
I think so. I'm not a fan of mergers. I went through the Melbourne Hawthorn days. It was just civil war. Unfortunately, some at Hawthorn were strong enough to make that all go away. Don Scott was the leader in charge. He had a great support in and around him, and it went on and on. But I don't think, all Caro does is report what she gets told. So whoever's discussing it, I think there are plenty of other big issues on the table. Speaking of big issues, we've got the bloke who's faced it all as the leader of the game. And for what it's worth, Lee, I think most people I speak to think you've done a great job. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jared. G'day, Sam. We're going to speak to the actual leader shortly, and there's a few things we want to ask. Anything about... There was so many... About 2 weeks ago, we did a lot of what-ifs. We said what-ifs. And all that's going on in the footy world at the moment, there's a lot of what-ifs. Or what if we did that? What if we go to 16 aside? What if we go to shorter quarters? What if maybe we merge a club? What if we maybe relocate a club? Mm. To be honest, I think all they are is off-the-cuff what-ifs. I don't suspect there's any substance at all to the actual discussions of anyone who's in any kind of position of power in and around the AFL.
Well, you're absolutely right, Lee, and I did elevate you slightly ahead of our special guest tonight in Gil McLachlan. The same sentiments apply to you. Welcome to you, Gil.
Thanks, Jared. Thanks, guys.
How are you holding up?
Going well. Yeah, we just got off a conference call with all of the clubs and, I'm getting very used to WebEx.
Yep.
There's the and the laptop. So yeah, lots of meetings. But we're moving forward, Jared.
You must have been delighted before I throw to Lee Matthews. You must have been delighted to finally A, put to bed the deal with the players, and B, put to bed the deal with the banks.
Yeah, I think. I mean, there's it's been a very busy 10 days or so, and I'll sort of just say this once and then do it. I mean, I just want to make sure we're going to talk about the business of footy. I know that, and that's the conversation today. But you know, we're really conscious about how small we are in the landscape that we're dealing with mm-hmm. at the moment with this pandemic and the implications of people's health and the toll on people's livelihoods and the economy. And I want to do that in the context before we sound like this is all we care about, and make sure that we understand that we know our place, but in the end that footy is important to a lot of people as well. And the last 10 days have been about making sure that we can come out of this uncertain period as strong as ever. And so, you know, there's obviously been some big decisions around cost cutting across the industry. There's a deal with the players. And then we've put our balance sheet into play by raising liquidity to make sure we can stand behind all 18 clubs. So the last piece is working through with the clubs are there with the new sort of funding model where we can have that balance sheet stand behind our 18 clubs. And that's the last piece of this sort of 2-week block.
Gillen, before I get to my question, just a congratulations. Being in Brisbane and you have a bit of an idea what's going on in the other winter sports, the NRL and the rugby union, who have virtually got very little cash in the kitty. 6 weeks ago, and it's a great congratulations before I get into the question, the game probably had a couple of hundred million in cash sort of in the kitty and $1 billion asset at Marvel Stadium. Now, when Marvel Stadium was bought in 2016, I think most of us thought, oh, that's nice. But all of a sudden, that $1 billion asset is probably going to be the asset that's going to enable you with some savage cost-cutting to make sure the game, to a degree, survives in the manner that we've seen recently.
Yeah, that's right, Lee. I mean, I think there's, you know, buying it a couple of years ago meant we have the freehold title and it's unencumbered and there's no debt against it. So, you know, it gives us that balance sheet. The, you know, a lot of congratulations goes to the people 20 years ago made that decision around Docklands, and so I think it's been a, you know, it's the industry asset that 18 clubs and some good decision making have generated, and now you need to use that asset. So we've got to make sure though that the tough decisions are made, and we can, you know, we take a really conservative approach about how this plays out over the next period of time to make sure we come back, as I said, with 18 clubs and able to support community footy and all the things we do across the country.
A couple of facts or miss or true. Is the AFL executive, is yourself taking the same pay cut as the players are taking? Is that fact or fiction?
No, I am. Yeah, no, I've given that commitment. Yeah, right. And my management team are taking significant pay cuts.
Other one, in the big picture point of view, when Tony Cochran, when Ross Lyon suggested that maybe the Suns might not be viable, all that kind of stuff, he trotted out the line I've heard trotted out, that the ninth game is worth like $45 million, which is like one ninth of what the TV rights are. Is that anywhere near fact or fiction, that if the ninth game, which is probably the difference between a Friday night game or a Twilight Saturday game, you know, the pure mathematics of how big a percentage, it's not, couldn't be one ninth, could it?
Listen, it's a significant number. Whether it's exactly a ninth, Lee, you will debate the marginal economics of broadcast rights. But what Tony's point is that if it's not a complete payment, the clubs substantially pay for themselves by creating an extra game which does get sold. And whether it's a ninth or a twelfth or whatever, it's still a large amount of money. And the strategic value of those clubs is significant, as well, you know, they're dealing with 54% of Australia's population, New South Wales and Queensland. So the strategic rationale is there, and there is a business case, which I don't think people quite see, which is his point, that there is an additional game which attracts broadcast and rights and now the broader sponsorship value.
Can I ask you about the discussion? I know you've put it to bed essentially by saying you want to bring back all 18 clubs, but there's going to be some savage times ahead financially for the game and for the country. Is that a long-term guarantee, Gil?
About 18 clubs?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jared, I guess I'll make a couple of points. You know, we're just focused on this period of time, which is come very fast, and we're dealing with it as quickly and as well as we can, and we won't get it all right. The concept then of in this period or in any context of talking about mergers or relocations, simply I have not been part of that, and it's not something that's occurring in conversations I've had. We made the commitment that we're 18 in and 18 out in the same form. That's all I can talk to, and it's, you know, I think I'm pretty definitive on that.
Mm. Just on this, on the soft cap, Gil, a couple of things I'm interested in. I mean, at the moment, the industry, the 18 clubs, in a real cooperative spirit, but they'll go back to ferocious competing sometime in the future. Is it time for the soft cap on the non-football part of the spend to become a hard cap so the rich and powerful can't keep pushing up and up and up in the years ahead?
I think that there's been discussion and we haven't landed on that, Lee. I mean, but certainly what, and I think you alluded to it in the intro, there's just lots of people in a period like this of dramatic, clearly uncertainty, and therefore the implications there, well, there's change going on now about, you know, in football, and there's cost cutting, and there's, you know, there'll be hopefully a 17-game season. And so in that landscape, people have got lots of views and lots of change. And I'm sure, as your point, Jared, someone's talked about a merger, or someone's talked about a relocation, or someone's talked about that. But substantively, we've got to get stabilised, which we're close to doing, and then look ahead for our 17-game season, what that looks like. And then, Lee, your point is, beyond that, what does 2021 look like in 2022? So, yeah, hard caps have come up, soft caps, we haven't landed on that. What the cap looks like, those are the discussions that we really get the teeth into once we've got a club arrangements in place by the end of the week, and then we'll sort of, the industry can sort of start to look forward as we sort of have consolidated over the last 2 weeks, if that makes sense.
Gillen, has the league arrived on a time frame or even a date as to when it would be the last hurrah or when it would approach too late for getting a 17-game season? You used the word hopefully before.
Well, I just only put in there, we're confident, but this is so uncertain, Sam, that all I'm saying is that there is always uncertainty. We have a clear plan about 17 games. We hope it's as soon as possible. But there is an asterisk, which I think everyone accepts.
Yep.
So that's just being sort of mature about it. Now, I don't know when, you know, we'll see modelling around when the peak is, that we have everyone, it might vary by state, there'll be a federal view as opposed to a state view. So we'll just take the best advice and we'll continue to talk to the right people and plan for and the plans might have to change, but we hope and are optimistic we'll be on, you know, sooner rather than later, but it's really uncertain.
But could you potentially start the season knowing that you might not get to 17 and have to call it, you know, call the final series at the end of 14 games or something like similar?
I don't know. What I do think is that hopefully we have, once it becomes clear and certain, we have enough certainty about when we can start, then we would sort of plan it out and know that once we've started, we wouldn't stop and have a definitive plan to play out the season.
Yep.
I'm hopeful that's how it would work.
You didn't play an AFLW grand final because you thought it was contrived and that seemed to be well accepted by everybody in the game. How many games do we need for it not to be a contrived season, do you think, Gil?
No, people have asked me that, Jared. I think that we've set ourselves up in a decent position by making the quite early strong call to go to 17 rounds, and not everyone agreed with that at the time. But I think now you see, okay, we've got something, we know there is integrity in it. And until we're faced with this thing that we actually can't, it's so late that when we get to start that we can't deliver on the 17, that's going to be our focus about actually how we can credibly get the 17 away, Jared, rather than looking ahead to how we can crimp it. I think that'll be our, you know, part of Sam's question about when and how. I think part of the as the weeks go by, we're looking at how we, you know, what's the minimum time we need to get 17 rounds away and then finals with you know, trying to finish in 2020.
Can I ask you about your negotiations with the Players Association? It came to light a few days ago. I read a article by Tom Morris about the lack of a callback agreement in the contract. I'd never heard of the callback agreement, but clearly it's something that's big in American sport that was negotiated out of the contract. If we have our time again, the next time you go and do a Players Association agreement, will there be a callback agreement in there, given that there is some chance, it might be 100 to 1 as we've found out, that another pandemic arises or something that is of an unforeseen nature impacts on the game?
I'm not really sure what you're talking about, Jared. What's a call? What are you talking about, the callback?
Well, the lack of a callback, minimises the damage that the players would receive if, in fact, something like this occurs.
I'm not sure that. So what was negotiated was a revenue share. So the players on essentially got 28 or 29% of total revenue, and that is on a 5-year period. So we're now short. They'll have to make up over the next couple of years. So within a year, you obviously set that, and then there's this extraordinary circumstance, and then you renegotiate like we did. So I'm not sure of what the. I'm not trying to be obtuse. I just don't know what the missing link is.
Could the players have legally insisted on getting 100% of their salaries, even though there's no games?
We made a decision that we didn't want to go down this path. We've got a strong partnership with our players. They're important to our industry coming back, and we've got a unified industry. But in a technical sense, Lee, then because business can't go on because of this stuff, then there's a stand down provision that applies to all business, and that theoretically could have happened, and they would have been paid nothing. But that would apply, but it's not a path we wanted to or contemplated going down. We've got a deal we think is fair. We've got a good relationship with the players. They've made, they're putting their shoulder to the wheel and that. Everyone have their views, but that's where we landed.
Gillon, you've also got a strong relationship with your broadcasters. Are you any closer to moving towards an extension with Seven and Fox for a couple of years on the current deal?
Listen, I don't really like to comment on that other than to say we've got a great partnership with them. This is a testing time for us, for them, and this is where long-term partnerships come to fore when you can have really grown-up discussions about where each other's at, and you take a longer-term view and work through it. And that's all I can say is that we'll have the. We're lucky to have good partnerships, and we'll work through this together.
Sounded like a positive response from me, Jared.
I think we'll address that one when you've left us, Gil. can I ask you about how you have managed your time? I mean, about a week ago, you looked as if you hadn't been to bed for about 2 or 3 weeks. When did the enormity of this thing first strike you?
It happened fast. It was sort of whatever it was, the week of the season launch, and it just... Things happened fast, and it was not something we thought was going to happen when it did. The mass gathering restrictions, and suddenly they were on us, and we've only got first inkling of that, I think, on the Tuesday before the Thursday night game. Mm. And so, the things were moved very fast, and so suddenly the enormity of the what was going to happen to our community and the scale of this bloody creeping insidious thing, and then the scale of what it was going to mean for our game came up pretty quickly. So it was if I looked a bit weary, I guess, because it was a lot to work through over the course of a couple of weeks to make some big decisions and ultimately to make a really big call to suspend the season, which has implications for a lot of people, but in our view, was the only responsible decision to make.
Can I take you back to the beginning, the whole just financial thing? Because I've been annoyed on your behalf, in a way, or the football's behalf, that some people say, elite sport's living beyond its means. Because all of a sudden, you get a coronavirus pandemic and everything, it's like a nuclear war effect. But prior to this 6 weeks ago, the AFL was in such superb shape financially and still probably will be because of the Marvel Stadium asset that you must get annoyed that people go down that line when the AFL situation was so prosperous 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, I've heard that, Lee. In the end, you're the one who said we've got a very significant asset, Marvel Stadium, $1 billion or whatever it's worth, and significant cash in the bank. We had a future fund reserve, which we've been putting aside for some time, which was, as you said, good nine figures. But when you've got a business that, is a $1 billion industry, and then suddenly through this extraordinary thing that is impacting all business and so many people, and we're not alone, and I'm just saying then really it's an extraordinary, you need an extraordinary balance sheet to be able to deal with it effectively. And we will get through this, but I feel that we're well positioned given decisions we've made around putting money aside rather than poorly positioned. And that, you know, people will judge, have their own views on that, but that's certainly what I think.
One final one, and it's about the biggest game in the land, and that is the AFL Grand Final, biggest game of AFL football anyway. Clearly the MCG, if it's at the same time that the World Cup is on, that won't be available. We understand that cricket has a commercial arrangement with the AFL to have the Marvel Stadium booked out. If it was to come to be that they were bloody-minded and they didn't see fit to, I guess, release the Marvel Stadium for one particular match, and even if they did, would you see this as an opportunity to play the Grand Final outside of Victoria?
I don't think they could be that bloody-minded, could they, Jared?
You deal with them, not me.
Who knows? All I know is that everyone will work together on this. In the end, this is a community issue that is confronting us at all. And we're a small part of what is a large-scale problem. And in the end, the health and well-being of the community is number one. And after that is then we work to try and put our community back together whenever we come out of our lockdown. I know that everyone will work together, the venues, the states, the sports, for our supporters and for our communities, will make it all work. And so when I see that stuff today, I just know that someone who's just, you know, I don't know, they've just, I don't buy into all that. We'll work together with cricket, we'll work together with the states, and wherever we land, it'll be done in the right spirit, because this is so much bigger than us at the moment. Mm. And I've never seen such an appetite for everyone to work together and work through the problems. When people say, oh, it's cricket first or whatever, I don't have that view. I think it's community first, and we will work through this because all Australians demand that we do that. And so this, I'm just not going to get into those conflicts because they're a complete nonsense, and we're all better than that. And we'll work through this, and we'll do everything we can for our community at the right time to put our game back on, play our season, give people a bit of joy, and get footy back in their communities and at the elite level.
Gillen, I think a lot of people would agree you've done a tremendous job in incredibly difficult circumstances. We appreciate your time and we'll speak to you soon.
Thanks for having me, guys. Cheers.
Gillen McLachlan there, the AFL Chief Executive on Sports Day, which is powered by a 100% Australian electricity and gas retailer. That's Red Energy. Switch today. Don't go anywhere. Jared Healy, Lee Matthews, after News Headlines with Tony Tardio.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
The lethal.
Talk about a He-Man.
Injection.
Yeah, one of the most popular segments on the Saturday football show for the 3RW team. We thought we'd pinch it, Lee, given you're not working on Saturdays, and inject it into Sports Day for Red Energy, born and bred in Melbourne. That's Red Energy. Welcome back to you, Lee.
Thank you. Yes, I always laugh at the intro, so it gets me off track. What I want to talk about is a football and financial issue. Like, growing up, to me, AFL was always a player's game. We always used to look at American Gridiron, which seemed like a coach's game. I mean, they just told the player, each player had a specific function, and you just did your specific function. Now, what has happened over my footy lifetime is that the game has become much more coached as time's gone on. It's become more structured. It's become more defensive, because when you coach, defensive structures are the most effective thing that you can do with outside coaching. Attacking skill and initiative is much harder to actually coach. So what I've been kind of thinking, and on the discussion about, we might have a reset on where money is being devoted in the football environment. And what we've had, the player salary cap, I think, lately has been what, 14 million, I think, in round figures. And the what has been a soft cap, which is the amount you can spend on your football department, which is about 10 million. It's been an enormous introduction to the game, because the Eagles, Collingwood, the big, powerful, rich clubs, they could just outspend everybody if there wasn't a cap. Fortunately, most of the clubs have actually not kept spending and have sort of accepted that soft cap a little bit. But basically, I think if we're going to lessen the amount of money going into football clubs and salary caps, which is probably going to have to happen over the next 5 years, it'll work its way out probably 20 years after that. I've always thought, simple principle, the hard cap on non-player spend in your football department should be hard capped at 50% of the player salary. A simple principle. If the player salary is 15 million, well then the soft cap's about 7.5 million. I mean, mm-hmm. This should be as much money as you can spend. You can't put the genie back in the bottle. You can get rid of most of the coaches out of the current coaches box. We know the game has been heavily coached with numbers and stats analysts and all that kind of thing, but you can't put the genie back in. Even if you only had two or three coaches, they'd still be using the same, what you'd say, radical method of building a house, which has come into vogue in the last decade or so, even if they didn't have so many people behind the scenes. But I think going forward, so that we can have a relatively equal competition, equalisation means close games for me. And I love close games because that's where the tension of the game applies. So to make sure there is a bit of evenness in this, make the hard cap on non-football, non-player spend 50% of the player cap, two-thirds to the players, one-third to the non-players.
Interesting stuff, Lee, and it will be fun. Interesting just to see how prophetic your words are when the new caps come in the next year or two. But can you tell me, Lee, I've heard Mark Harvey say, Ken Hinckley say it, I think Ross Lyon, he may have been an account of you, but the amount of people in coaches' boxes right now, do you see that as being better for the game or do you see it as increasing the chances of winning?
Definitely better for increases the chance of winning. I mean, you're only doing it because you think it's going to help. There's been an element, before the soft cap, there was an element of more's better. If you got the money, spend it, what the hell? What have we got to lose? But I don't think it makes the game a better spectacle. I think, as I said, to go back to my starting point, I think AFL has always been a player's game. Like, there's no offside rule, no line of scrimmage. Once the game's in motion, there's no positioning restriction. You go where you like. And that's been the sort of controlled chaos in a little bit the game's been. But it has been so much more structured, particularly the last decade. The game has changed more in the last decade than the previous 50 years, I reckon, because the coaching, I mean, that word structure, I hate it, because structure means the opposite of initiative.
Yep.
And we want initiative. And that's the greatest thing the game can give us, in my view.
Keith joined us on the Harcourts open line, 13 13 32. We'll take your calls after the break. But down in Portland, the southwest corner of the state, Keith has a bit to say. Yours, Keith.
Yeah, good day, Jared, Sam Lee. Look, I'm just thinking, do we go back to basics? Like, do we need 200 people working for every club? You know, it's only one club wins a grand final, so they're the only ones that haven't wasted all that money in the coaches' box and everywhere. Is that true?
What I would say, Keith, is the urge for the competitive edge is the thing that drives all this. You're trying to get an edge over the opposition, and if you're allowed to, you'll try any mechanism that, you know, that's legal, that you're allowed to do, to actually give you the best chance of winning. And that's really what the clubs are doing. And with the help of the AFL funding the clubs that can't fund themselves, the clubs have been able to fund the numbers that we currently see, say in a coach's box, for example.
Thanks, Keith. That was all for Macca's new 100% Aussie grass-fed beef burger. Naturally delicious and Australian-made. Boost your sales with the Australian-made logo. Don't go anywhere. Lee Matthews to continue on Sports Day after this.
Yeah, I did. I gave him a call the other night. Look, I'd say that I and all of our members have an enormous respect for Lee, and he's completely entitled to his opinion. You know, in our conversation, you know, his view was that we should have just done exactly what the AFL asked of us. You know, and the conversation I had with him was partway through this week before we got to the end. I think clearly we took a few days to work through it, which I don't think was inappropriate given the complexity of what we're dealing with.
That was the voice of Paul Marsh on the weekend, saying that he gave our own Lee Matthews a call following comments from last week. Lee, how did that conversation go?
Well, when he rang, I thought he was going to take my name off the trophy for the Players Association Award, I must say. So I was happy to find out that's not the case. Now, well, I did use the last, it was only a week ago, wasn't it, on this program last week, when I thought the players For me, I was disappointed with what I saw as an obstinate attitude to not following the leader, which the rest of us were doing, the leader in our game being the AFL. And I used the term I'd lost a bit of respect for the Player Association. That was the point, I think, that Paul rang about, because that was a term, I guess, that they were concerned about and just wanted to... We just had a conversation. And the thing was, Jared and Sam, the Players Association know the AFL better than me. And I didn't think there was a negotiation to be had, and clearly there was, and the players got a bit better deal than the AFL seemed to be offering, if we could believe the, you know, minus 80% was basically what the AFL was offering. Sam, is that what we were led to believe? Well, clearly that wasn't the end result. So by the end of the week, I thought to myself, oh, well, obviously the obstinate attitude worked.
It was interesting because when I asked Paul Marsh about the callback agreement or the lack of, he fully understood where it was at. And I think to me the missing picture was it just seemed as if the players knew that they had the strong hand.
Well, I think so. That's right. I mean, stronger than we all thought. I mean, you've been sort of board members at the Lions, where you know that this is what's going on in the football world. This is what has to happen around clubs, and this is what has happened around AFL House. I mean, this is just as we read, simple stat: 80% of the club AFL people were basically stood down. Whatever their contract said, they were stood down. But yes, I think we probably can glean that one, the collective bargaining agreement contract was much stronger than most of the other contracts around the footy world. And yes, I think the Players Association probably knew better than I that the AFL would negotiate. They don't like to use the term negotiate, but a negotiation happened, and the players ended up with a better deal than seemed to be there on the Monday.
So, Lee, when it's all said and done, though, does it still sit with you a little bit uncomfortably how it all played out?
Well, no, because the end result proved that what I thought was an obstinate attitude to wasting everyone's time, because the AFL had a certain amount of the cake they'd split up. This was the part of, this was last Monday, I'm talking, last Tuesday, only a week ago. Mm. This is the part of the cake that is there for the players. And there is no negotiation. We heard Jeff Kennett say that in the, you know, was one of the people who's part. There's a lot of people at the AFL decision making process, but the war cabinet, as it's termed, that no, there's just no more money there. Mm. This is all the money there is. But one, and I think I mentioned it at the end of what we were talking about it last Tuesday. All of a sudden, it occurred to us that the Marvel Stadium $1 billion asset. Mm. Which would be the security for what is now, we now know, is a $500 or $600 million line of credit. There was more money to be accessed than we were led to believe last Tuesday.
Let's go back to Gill's interview and a couple of issues. Lee, the grand final, I don't think Gill's got a huge stomach for it to be outside of Victoria at this stage. Just going on, I thought it might have been an opportunity to take it to one of the other states, if, say, the Eagles finished on top. And I know there'd be issues with the grounds over there as well, but it would appear as if he's reasonably keen on it being in Melbourne.
Well, I'd say this goes under the what if. There's so many what ifs which what might happen over the next 7 or 8 months. Mm. I say to myself, 2020 is a survival season.
Yep.
How do we survive? How do we maximise revenues? To me, whoever ends up being premier at the end of it is less important than getting, you know, 100, 140 games played. And if we can get more money out of best of three grand final, go for it. Because this year, we've got to remember, this year's about survival. Yep. And therefore, whatever is the best method of maximising revenues will help the game's financial survival. For me, go for it.
Lee, what about Tony Cochrane?
Before you go, so you're fully supportive of a best of three grand final.
If you can say we can make an extra five, you know, yeah, we can make millions more out of a best of three. This is like the war years. Yep. Now, I can't remember the war years. I wasn't even born. But did we even play 20 games in the war years?
We know. I think we played 18.
Well, there was mostly a premier. Eventually, was awarded. But I think we're in a survival season. This is a very different year. You can put an asterisk on it if you want to, and we might end up with a premier. But that is much, much less important than actually getting the most of the home and away, so, you know, what is it, 144 games left to play, just for the financing of the game, so that there was a smaller debt being there at the end of the year. So I reckon anything that's going to maximise revenues, don't worry about whether it's fair. You just got to do it.
This is Sports Day for Kia with Australia's best 7-year factory warranty and Red Energy, born and bred in Melbourne. That's Red Energy. Lee, I want to ask you about what determines success and failure of a coach, but we'll do that right after this.
A sports news update for Tyre Power. Keeping the Australian public safe on the roads in difficult times. Tyrepower.com.au.
Sports news update for Tyre Power, Australia's biggest independent tyre retailer, here to help. Tyrepower.com.au. Let's hear what Gillon McLachlan, the AFL chief executive, had to say in response to a question about a possible extension for the TV broadcast rights.
Listen, I don't really like to comment on that other than to say we've got a great partnership with them. This is a testing time for us, for them, and this is where long-term partnerships come to fore, when you can have really grown-up discussions about where each other's at, and you know, you take a longer-term view and work through it. And that's all I can say is that we'll have here. We're lucky to have good partnerships, and we'll work through this together.
That sounded to me, Jared, like we've got something in the works.
Well, it would make sense to me, Lee, if the broadcasters were struggling at their end, the AFL struggling, that they probably expand the contract to, lessen the load of 1 year over a few years.
Yeah, well, you might be right there, because it might be actually, that point of actually, if, say, you go into 23-24, but things might change in 21-22 a bit. Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
Potentially, yeah. Well, that's potentially good. But the broadcasters would be exactly like everyone else in the world. They wouldn't know what their business is going to be in 6 months' time.
Mm.
I mean, because everybody, the whole world is in this uncertain about what the future is going to hold. And, I mean, the AFL, that line of credit is going to mean that the game is going to be overfunded for a period of time,
yep.
Even if there's no gain for the next 12 months. But, the broadcasts, the free-to-air networks, the Foxtels, they might have their own business models that are actually being a little bit in trouble even before the coronavirus hit.
Peter Ryan's just texted in, Lee, footy in war years. He says that we played 12 games in 1916, a bit of a non-season that one with four teams, but government
wanted a premier.
Government wanted to keep going. Yeah, there was a premier.
Yeah.
Not sure who it was. We played 16 games in 42 and 43 and had there was a bye in 42 because Geelong were out.
Yeah, I mean, the question of how many games can you play before you actually do a final series, I mean, that's a valid point. Right, for this year, as I said, I just go back to this is a survival season. If you can only get 11 rounds out, you still play a final series.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to earn whatever dollars they can earn for the game to be better placed at the end of this 12 months than it might otherwise be.
Lee, Tony Cochran described Ross Lyon as a failed coach. In your eyes, what dictates success and failure for a coach?
Well, I love Tony Cochran's passion, to be honest, but he does play the man. I mean, just because Ross queried whether the investment in the Suns should be looked at, all of a sudden Tony jumps on people like that, which happened to be right. And he called him a failed coach.
Mm.
Now, if Ross Lyon's a failed coach, there's most coaches are. He's actually winning percentage over 13 seasons, 57%. Coached teams into four grand finals. One was a replay. None of them won a premiership. And he's a really successful coach. What I was really interested in, I'll make this quick because I know we're almost to seven. There was an article about teams that had finished top four in the last 60 years and how many flags they've won. Like Collingwood have been top four the last 60 years, 27 times, only won two flags. Hawthorn are 24 for 13 flags. So there's a big difference.
Yeah.
To me, we've got to get... everyone wants to be premiers. Everyone wants to make the grand final. Everyone wants to make top four. Everyone wants to play finals. The baseline of success is a winning season. And that is currently, if you win 12 games, that is a winning season. And we should almost start with that before we start apportioning success and failure.
You've had a big night tonight, Lee. Have a rest. We'll speak to you later in
the week.
Thanks,
Lee.
See you next week. Bye.
Sports Day for Kia's open season, continuing with match-winning deals. And Red Energy, a 100% Australian gas and electricity retailer.
Yeah, that's Red Energy. Welcome along to the program if you're just joining us. We had Gillon McLachlan on earlier. We'll replay you a little bit of what he had to say. Lee Matthews is also with us, and he has pushed up pretty strongly for a best of three grand final series, if in fact it's going to bring more revenue into the game. We're also going to open up the lines on the Harcourt Open line for your spray of the month for Spitwater. For Spitwater high pressure cleaners, tools, they're not toys. Aussie engineered and Aussie made for 30 years. And I'm going to kick it off because I know we've got a couple with the spray to the Kingston Council. Now, I might be wrong here, but I don't know any way that you're going to transfer the virus by banning swimming. How are you going to prevent it? So every other community is still able to swim. I know we don't want congestion on the beach and beaches are closed, but every other beach I drive past from here to by Morris, with the exception of Kingston Council, allowing you to swim. Now, I can't see any relevance in banning swimming, particularly if you're able, if it's your form of exercise.
So happy to ban people congregating on the beach?
Oh, absolutely. That's common sense.
But if you're in the water?
Well, if you're going for a swim and you're doing a kilometre and you or whatever you're doing,
and you're not doing it with six other blokes?
And you're not doing it, even if you are doing it and you're a separate, you're at a reasonable distance apart.
Yeah,
no problems, just like all the bike riders.
And we did it.
They're all riding on Beach Road. They're all still practicing isolation. And whilst I'm at it, Scoop, I've got one other spray. It's just left me. Right. The banning of golf. I mean, once again, why can't you have two players on a course and you might have to miss a group?
So, yeah.
I mean, if there's, and tennis is another one.
Tennis, I don't understand.
We do not have to shut the world down.
So, golf.
Based on exercise, a exercise parameter only, go and play your tennis, go and play your golf, and then go home.
So, I went and played golf on the weekend, Jared, and the club in which I play gave some pretty strict rules.
Yep.
Couldn't touch the pin, which I understand.
Yep.
There's no competition because a daily comp because they wouldn't let you swap scorecards.
Right.
No shaking of hands, obvious. And
I still think you could, at this stage, have a scorecard. You're just filling your own scorecard.
No, no, so this is what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, I agree with you. And you couldn't go into the clubhouse. You could get a takeaway coffee.
Yeah. I understand that. That's like a restaurant.
I understand all of it. But all I'm saying is I played a round of golf with three other guys on the weekend.
Yeah.
I didn't go near one of them.
Mm.
So the difference between me going to a golf course, spending 4 hours on the track, to going to the supermarket.
Going to Bunnings.
And brushing past 17 different people, all of which come from completely different
places. Yeah, no, that makes no sense to me.
Can I defer my spray to Tony McAvoy, who had this spray for Fred Kersley on his ride of Deep Forced last weekend?
Tony McAvoy with a post-race report for Deep Force. What an appalling piece of horsemanship and riding this was by Fred Kersley, who's got the audacity to come back in and say he was on a nice piece of grass where all the winners were coming from on the turn, and the horse didn't have the explosive finish. What an idiot. That'll be his last ride for me. He had an opportunity to come back and get in and have some cover, but elected to sit out there and kept pressing on the horse who didn't have the speed to go forward. So he's suggesting the horse needs blinkers. I'm suggesting Fred Kersley needs a blindfold. So please don't judge your horse on today. Thank you.
Oh, that was all for Spitwater. That's what it does. And Tony McAvoy, he just thought, well, okay, bugger this bloke. Hey, I clearly had a blue before he went and sat down beside the microphone.
Fred Kersley needs a blindfold.
Fred
Kersley.
Thank you. I think we need to get Fred on the line tomorrow, Brooksy.
No doubt about that. Fred deserves a right of reply. If that is not one of the most pointed sprays, Jared.
Wasn't good.
At a time where you can't really give pointed sprays anymore in 2020.
No, that was fairly savage, blunt, and maybe accurate. I'm not sure if it was accurate or not. Maybe if anybody saw that race, maybe if you had your money on Deep Force, you'd like to weigh in on this. I mean, Fred may come on and say it was badly trained.
Or they could both just blame the horse. Did Lee Matthews do what I think he did about 20 minutes ago?
What was that?
Essentially promote a three-game grand final series?
I don't know if it's a promotion, but I reckon he was saying if we can make more money out of three grand finals than we can out of one, then it's absolutely on the money. This is what he had to say.
No, I think we're in a survival season. This is a very different year. You can put an asterisk on it if you want to, and we might end up with a premier, but that is much, much less important than actually getting most of the home and away, so, you know, the 144 games left to play just for the financing of the game, so that there was a smaller debt being there at the end of the year. So I reckon anything that's going to maximise revenues, don't worry about whether it's fair, you just got to do it.
stark contrast to what Matthew Lloyd had to say last night, who's all about integrity.
Yeah, I am, and this happens rarely, I'm in very much disagreement with Lloydie about that, because we don't have integrity in the fixture as it is.
Yes, we do.
No, we don't.
17 teams, we do.
No, but 22 games.
No, I understand that, yeah. You're talking about...
Sorry, the normal fixture.
Okay.
Not this year.
Yeah, okay.
But we don't have integrity. I don't want anyone to ever talk about integrity in a fixture until we go to everyone plays each other once or twice.
Yep.
Because we're never going to have it. Which I guess is and you I know you've said this before on Fox and on this show, Jared, but you know, if we played 12 games instead of 22.
No difference.
No. I mean, the only difference is the bleeding obvious. Mm. It's shorter.
Mm.
But in as far as integrity for a season.
Yeah. It's
irrelevant.
Unequal as well.
That's correct. Gillon McLachlan had this to say when we asked him and quizzed him about a potential interstate grand final, given that there is going to be, Jared, a bit of a traffic jam with the Melbourne stadiums.
I don't think they could be that bloody minor, could they, Jared?
you deal with them, not me.
I think, who knows? All I know is that everyone will work together on this. In the end, this is a community issue that is confronting us at all. And we're a small part of what is a large-scale problem. And in the end, the health and well-being of the community is number one. And after that is then we work to try and put our community back together whenever we come out of our lockdown. I know that everyone will work together, the venues, the states, the sports, for our supporters and for our communities, will make it all work. And so... when I see that stuff today, I just know that someone who's just, you know, I don't know, they've just, I don't buy into all that. We'll work together with cricket, we'll work together with the states, and wherever we land, it'll be done in the right spirit, because this is so much bigger than us at the moment, and I've never seen such an appetite for everyone to work together and work through the problems. When people say, oh, it's cricket first or whatever, I don't have that view. I think it's community first, and we will work through this, because all Australians demand that we do that. And so I'm just not going to get into those conflicts, because they're a complete nonsense, and we're all better than that. And we'll work through this, and we'll do everything we can for our community at the right time to put our game back on, play our season, give people a bit of joy, and get footy back in their communities and at the elite level.
So, Jared, if the number was 100 for the percentage of if we were going to play the grand final in the state of Victoria pre-coronavirus, what is that number reduced to right now?
Good question. I'd say somewhere around the 75 mark.
Yeah, I would have said 80. So we're in similar places there.
The question is, will it be at the MCG or will it be at Marvel Stadium? Now,
I think it'll still be at the G.
You'll think it'll still be at the G?
I'd have that at 80 as well.
You'd have that at 80. Well, I mean, the state government have got a lot of power, obviously, in this town, but if they have contractually agreed...
To the T20
World Cup...
Which may not happen anyway.
May not happen anyway, it's a good point. With the ICC, we've got a problem, because they don't give a stuff about AFL football.
No, and the ICC are notoriously difficult to deal with.
Mm.
Wouldn't, though, and again, we're talking about things that we don't know, but wouldn't, Jared, when we come out the back end of this coronavirus, globally, wouldn't the last thing... going back to normal would be international travel?
Yes, probably.
Yeah. So I would have, if we're having the number at 80 of the grand final being played in Melbourne, I would have at less than 50 the T20 World Cup going ahead.
T20 World Cup going ahead. So we've got sides coming from England.
India. South Africa.
Like, it's taken China. They're still locking down their borders because...
And Russia, I know Russia are relevant, but Russia have just locked down their borders.
Yeah, I don't think their first 11 is going to make it, though, at this stage.
No, but what I'm saying is...
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, the countries will all move together on this, you would think. It's no point one country opening up their borders.
Well, if you take a line through tennis, and we're going to talk to Peter Johnson later on about this.
Yep.
There's a lot of people in tennis think that the tennis year is over for the very reason that it's a global sport.
Yeah.
And we'll let Jono talk about that particular element. But... I think right now, when you're only relying on domestic travel, you're in a lot of better. You're in a much better position than you are if you need the international boys to get going.
And I know it's counterintuitive and in a dark way, sort of ironic, but the AFL may actually be advantaged by the coronavirus impacting if we can play the T20 World Cup.
Yep.
Because they may have pushed their season back, which would otherwise intersect with cricket,
yep,
if cricket could play.
Yep. I'll give you another irony. I should have put this up to the CEO. Most ironic thing about this whole thing is right now, after spending 6 months bagging everybody for not abandoning the Shanghai game, right now it's probably the safest place in the country, in the world. Because there's, from my understanding, not one person has died from coronavirus in Shanghai, which, given it's got a population of a couple of billion people.
I still can't believe that.
A couple of million people, whatever it is, more than a couple. In fact, I'll check that with Mr. Google very shortly. That's probably a much healthier place to have it than here. The other point is that not many people are going to turn up to the game. So
25 million people, the population of Shanghai.
25 million people.
Same population as Australia.
So it's about five times as big as this particular town. Geez, it'd be hard to get a ticket there at the grand final, wouldn't it? Some scalpers.
You're saying that of the 25 million people in Shanghai, there hasn't been one lost life from the coronavirus?
Well,
can we
Google that?
I'm sure you can.
Yep.
While you're Googling that, we might take one call before we get to a break, and that's from Craig. He wants to talk about Gillon McLachlan's interview. Welcome to you, Craig.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. Thanks, Stuart. Yeah, just the grand final question I found really interesting. And you mentioned before about integrity in the competition. I just wanted to drop in quickly that, you know, there's, in the fixture, there can be no integrity with that MCG grand final rule. It's an integrity black hole. But look, I had an idea that I wanted to run by both of you. From the problem that all people outside of Victoria have with this, you know, the AFL, is that it's a competition that celebrates the football heritage of one state only, Victoria. Now, what I mean by that is if you're from another state, which I am, you know, an interstate Australian, if you're from South Australia or Western Australia, what the value lies in all the clubs that have their 150-year history, which a lot of them are coming up to at the moment. That's where all the love, all the value, all the passion lies in the history. But in this competition that we call the AFL, the only history that's allowed in is all the Victorian clubs, and every other state, you know, you've got a club that's 20 or 30 years old. So what the idea I wanted to run by you, isn't this an ideal opportunity, you know, in this crisis to get talking? I mean, you can't get together for a conference, but why can't we start talking about the idea of a complete reset of the whole thing? I don't know, there's a couple of different models. You could have different conferences, or you could have different divisions, like in English soccer, where you can bring all the clubs, not just South Australia and West Australia, but other states as well, obviously Tassie, bring all the history into the comp so that all the other states, their history is validated. Just wanted to run that idea by you.
Look, it's a complex proposal that you're putting forward, but it is something that I faced on a personal level when I was asked to be a selector on the New South Wales best team of the century, was it? Yeah, the best team of the century. And it was just amazing just how much history came to the fore of all these incredible players who had played in the AFL. Now, I can't quite even remember whether it was the last century. I'm pretty sure it was last century, and it can't have been. It must have been right up until now, because a couple of the current players were selected in it. A lot of the current players were selected in it. But what I found unusual was it took a long, 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 long time for the AFL to actually get behind it. New South Wales AFL took some time to get in behind it. And, you know, it was driven by Richard Collis as an idea. And, you know, I think that this is testament to some of the things that our caller is saying.
It was the best New South Wales team of all time, by the way.
Right, okay. Best New South Wales team of all time. Thank you, Brooksy. Indeed it was. But it was, you know, it was part of AFL history.
But are you,
if AFL's at the top, it's part of AFL history. And it should have been, I think, probably more celebrated by more people from the AFL, not just people from the NSW AFL.
I see. So you're saying that the states themselves celebrated enough, but the AFL, which is based in Victoria, could do better.
Well, I think that the hierarchy could have, you know, seen it for what it was, and that is just this amazing collection of Australian rules history.
Yep.
Now, I'm not sure if you can recalibrate, you know, the seasons and recalibrate West Australia to South Australia and bring them all under one banner. That, to me, is a pretty difficult task, particularly now, but I understand your frustrations in many respects. But as a counter to that, I think we were going to all celebrate Port Adelaide's 150th anniversary.
Definitely.
Unfortunately, it's fallen on a year, 2020.
Very proud club.
Where it's, you know, going to have to celebrate in isolation more than anything. And hopefully they see fit to delay some of the celebrations, even though they've had one of the major ones.
Craig called us on the Harcourt's open line. Remember, you can talk to us about sport, but to talk real estate, speak to the experts at Harcourt. More sports day for Wilson Homes right after this.
Well, I've Googled it. They've got 11 new cases of coronavirus infection in Shanghai, but I cannot track down the number of deaths, if any.
Mortality rate.
Mortality rate, yep.
Well, they've got 11.
New ones.
Oh, 11 overnight, yep. Not 11 total.
No.
This is Sports Day for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Quick sport update. The Tokyo Olympics will commence next year in the same slot originally scheduled for this year, Jared. The opening ceremony to take place on July 23, 2021. I wonder how many hotels and flights have just kind of Control-C, Control-V 1 year later in the calendar, or if, in fact, that'll work. And June 1 is now D-Day for whether the Cox Plate will take place this year. It's currently scheduled for October 24. That might be cutting it fine.
Speaking of cuts, the FFA didn't muck around.
No, all players to take a pay cut indefinitely.
Yeah, 100%.
100%, yeah, sorry, no pay.
So no negotiation, no pay. And they're doing it well in rugby union at the present time. They're all turning on the CEO and rugby league. They're now turning
Todd Greenberg.
On the, Todd Greenberg's copying it.
Yep, saw that from our man Danny Wilder earlier today, reporting that. Now, Jared, what did you make of Gillen's response to whether we would, it was your question about the long-term plan for all 18 clubs. I'll get your thoughts on it. This is what he had to say.
Yeah, Jared, I guess I'll make a couple of points. You know, we're just focused on this period of time, which has come very fast, and we're dealing with it as quickly and as well as we can, and we won't get it all right. The concept then of in this period or in any context of talking about mergers or relocations, simply I have not been part of that, and it's not something that's occurring in conversations I've had. We've made the commitment that we're 18 in and 18 out in the same form. That's all I can talk to, and it's, you know, I think I'm pretty definitive on that.
Well, I think he's 100%. Open and honest about it. It wouldn't be discussed in the power brokers at AFL House, but there's plenty of people outside of the AFL building. And the AFL building right now, they're only worried about tomorrow and worried about next week and worried about the following month and worried about getting back and worrying about the health of things right in their immediate face. And that is like the draft coming up. That's about as far forward, I think, as they would be looking. But there's other people around the traps, people that have been CEOs, people that have been that are CEOs currently, people that are maybe presidents outside the loop of the central power, that they'd all be throwing up ideas. Maybe we should do this, maybe we should do that. But as Lee Matthews said, they're all maybes.
Remember how often you and I were talking about the team in Tasmania before all of this happened? I mean, it just felt like the Tasmanian team was happening, you know? It was going to get there.
Yeah, I didn't feel that. Right. I felt
well, certainly not now.
Well, I felt that it was, you know, I thought it was on the road,
on the horizon.
Yeah, but was it going to happen in 5 years? I doubt it.
Right.
Was it going to happen in 10 years? Possibly. So I think, and it could still happen in 10 years. Who knows?
I doubt that now.
Well, let's just play it 1 month at a time. 10 years a long time.
True.
Go back 10 years.
1 week's a long time at the moment.
Yeah, go back 10 years. It's you know, we didn't even have the Gold Coast.
Yep. Or GWS.
So, look, I think that lots and lots of things can happen. This has been a reset, a recheck. There'll be lots of things different in the immediate future. But, you know, I think within 3 to 4 years, the game will be back healthy and strong again.
Can I ask you, and I don't want to get into the broad discussion about North Melbourne and Tasmania, but if you were at Ben Buckley today, would you have responded to the talk about, like, it's not as though Caro went with a really strong story last night that I am told this and that this is going to happen and I've got this person on the record. It was more an off-the-cuff comment of...
Oh, no, it wasn't off-the-cuff because she said it on Friday as well.
Yeah, but she sort of, you know, the people that you speak to, like, I think it would have been absolutely fine if North Melbourne didn't address that today.
Yeah, I think he would have had to address it as the chairman. Eventually, he's going to be asked a question.
And that could be 6 weeks from now, Jared.
It could be, but maybe it's better off just nipping it in the bud. And I didn't read what Ben Buckley had to say, but all he had to say
Carrie
is speaking to the wrong people.
Yeah, and he said that at no stage had any other club CEO, nor had anyone from the AFL, talked to him about relocation.
Well, as if they would. I mean, that's a story that was 2, 3, 4 years old.
Mm.
And as I said, I was a great fan and disappointed that North Melbourne
didn't go to
the Gold Coast. Right. But it's too late. That bird has flown.
Mm.
I mean, the Gold Coast Suns are now a legitimate body, and I think it would be deleterious to now send the Kangaroos up there.
Yeah, I agree.
So, you know, I think, you know, they've made their bed. Like, I wouldn't be surprised at some stage if, you know, clubs were brought into a room and said, okay, here's the new model. You have to stand on your own 2 feet and you need to be financially independent. We can only provide this amount of money.
Ben Buckley said, you know my views very strongly. We're a Melbourne-based team. Any speculation is complete nonsense. It's not on the agenda. It is not being discussed and it won't be discussed.
Full stop.
It's time for a break here on Sports Day. More right after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. Well, Jared, in these sort of times, we thought we'd start a new segment. We're calling it From the Archives. We've got a lot of gold saved in our archives. We don't want it to go to waste. So each Tuesday, we'll get out some audio from the past and discuss how that particular issue played out.
Okay.
This week, we're going to have a listen back to your opening editorial. Now, I'm going to take you back to 2018.
Right.
April 26.
Right.
We've gone back the best part of 2 years.
Yes.
And it's I can't believe this is 2 years ago, regarding Ryan Burton's bump on Sean Higgins, which you'll remember knocked Higgins out, and there was a fairly big debate over whether he should be free to play, or whether he should get, you know, 3 or 4 weeks. He was cleared by the match review panel, despite the fact that he knocked Higgins out. It was the day that his firstborn child was born, Sean Higgins, and this was your take.
Steve Hocking's a smart bloke. Smart enough, I'm sure, to realise in time he's made an ill-considered decision to change the game's stance on the simple bump. It's a decision that in part will be viewed as contributing to Sean Higgins' major concussion and those that follow. Concussions that potentially have lifelong ramifications and legal suits. The rationale behind the change is flawed. The incidental nature of the outcome has been erroneously compared to that incurred in a marking contest in somehow trying to justify the change. Well, that's rubbish. In a mark, there's absolutely no other alternative. Burton and last week Lacroix could have tackled, and ironically, most coaches would prefer them to tackle. In electing to bump, they should be held to account for the outcome. If you want a comparison, incidental contact was already considered in the bumping act in the existing rule, but only if there was no other option, just like in the marking duel. If you had no other option and there was incidental contact, you didn't get a suspension. That's the real comparison. It's also been said that to suspend Burton, you would have needed to ban the bump. Again, a fallacy. The bump has survived 10 years living in harmony with strict liability that make you responsible for the outcome if you elect to bump, while ignoring other options, i.e. the tackle. I haven't got time to go into the flawed faux physics of time and speed of the perpetrator that's being applied to assess his liability. That's laughable. Consider a stationary tree. It's not moving, but it's absolutely capable of serious damage to a fast-moving object. A stationary player can do just as much damage as one charging that leaves the air or stays on the ground. If you really want to put on the white coat and play scientist, consider the physics of whiplash. You bump an unsuspecting player and his head always rocks forward towards the bumping player. It's why head clashes are so commonplace in that type of bump and not as unforeseeable as this rule would have you believe. It's why the strict liability rule was brought in the very first place, because they were such a common outcome that they just had to be considered by the player. But don't fear for the bump. The bump has to survive, particularly with so much congestion. You cannot get rid of the bump. But we must address the 5% of bumps that do 100% of the problems. All contact sports have, in the current era of concussion, been required to tighten their rules to provide a safe environment for athletes at all levels. And as such, we've introduced the head-on bumping rule, the dangerous tackle rule, the sliding rule, and of course the strict liability bumping rule. They've all been asking you to slightly modify your behaviour to make this a much safer sport. They've all been good rules with great intent. Some have required modifying along the way, but on the whole, the changes have been extremely beneficial. So in summary, it was a strange and somewhat dangerous decision to change back, to fly in the face of world sport, after the battle for player behaviour change has already been won. To now pardon the so-called unforeseeable head clashes when strict liability was introduced because the head clashes were extremely foreseeable is somewhat bewildering, and the quicker we get back to strict liability, the better. It will be an even stranger decision if given a period of time, a period of reflection, a smart bloke like Stephen Hawking doesn't reconsider and change it back. For if he doesn't, surely the Commission must and will. Well, that's mine, Lee. As you can hear, it's been a major bee in my bonnet since Monday night. What do you got for me?
I remember listening to that editorial, driving home and sitting outside my house and thinking at the time that it was on the money. And I wondered at the time how that editorial and the incident was going to age. Well, your editorial has aged well, and the fact that Ryan Burton was clear to play the next week, and I just watched that today coming in, has aged terribly.
Well, the best assessment of whether it's aged or not is whether or not the rule changed back, and that's exactly what happened. 6 months down the track,
yeah.
Steve Hawking got to it, and he said, yep, that was a dumb decision by myself and whoever else was involved. These bumps are foreseeable. We have had so many bumps.
Yeah, but Jared, I'm still not confident that they'll... with these situations, the AFL will make the right decision.
Oh, I'm much more confident than I was. Because
maybe more confident.
We are back to strict liability. You elect the bump, you pay the price. And that was as simple as that, unless there is absolutely no other alternative. So that was a rule brought in by Adrian Anderson a decade ago. It should have been applied a lot earlier than that. He had to fight really hard to bring it in. But it was brought in, and it was for the much betterment of the game. And that reinterpretation by stealth by Michael Christian and Steve Hawking and whoever else was involved, was a real body blow to where the game's going. But now with concussion being even more prevalent and more damaging to the potential long-term health of the game, that rule just is there in concrete.
But even at the time, and I still don't know to this day, how was the action of Burton not deemed to be careless?
Oh, it was it was a dumb decision.
Take away the fact that he knocked him out.
Yeah, no, right? It was a dumb decision all
I'm
around.
I'm just not sure... with all the alternatives that he had the alternative to tackle, yep, given that Higgins had the ball.
Yep.
He had the alternative to miss him and not make contact at all.
Well, that's not an alternative.
No, probably not as much as tackling. But how was the incident itself deemed... Okay, I can get that it was maybe not intentional that he tried to hit him in the head. That I can swallow.
Yeah, but it's like when you run a red light. You don't intentionally try and knock somebody off their bike.
No, but see, this
if you run the red light, you are held responsible for what happens.
Yeah, but unfortunately, and I'm with you there, Jared, they changed the definition of intentional.
I understand
to
that.
Everything they changed
was crap.
Agreed.
And fortunately, as I said, smart bloke like Steve Hawking, he knows when he's made a blue. He changed it back. And so now we've got clarity again.
Because no one intends to create a reportable offence unless I walk up to you,
and
look at
bang.
You off the ball and punch you in the face.
No, that whole nonsense about
intentionality
is nonsense. We knew that at the time, and we know it now. And we also know...
enjoy that segment.
...that we've got to go take a break. More Sports Day with Peter Johnson on the other side.
Welcome back to Sports Day. It's Phil Wilson Homes. Chat with one of their friendly staff today about personalising a home design to suit your individual lifestyle. Well, Jared, the latest in the tennis world, according to Dirk Hordorf, who is, I think, the second in charge in German tennis.
Yep.
Wimbledon is going to be cancelled Wednesday London time.
Right.
So a little bit from now. But clearly they've said all along, Jared, that it wouldn't be played behind closed doors and that postponement was just not something that they could feasibly do. So we're set to have a year without Wimbledon and potentially, Jared, without more Grand Slam tennis, which would be a huge disappointment.
Well, let's find out, because the voice of tennis on this channel has just returned from the US. He's put himself in strict isolation for the last 2 weeks, and he's emerged from his bunker. And I speak, of course, of Peter Johnson, who joins us. How's the bunker in East Malvern going, Jono? Have you emerged as a sane man?
Jared and Sam, it's just a thrill to be out of the house, I can tell you that.
How's the marriage?
Oh, yeah, it was time to get out of the house.
I see.
For sure.
Now, you went over there, obviously, to see your daughter, who's got a scholarship over at one of the universities. Tell us about America at the moment before we talk tennis.
Well, the amazing thing, I think, Jared and Sam, is how quickly this has come on, because literally probably 3.5 weeks ago, New York was bussing, I guess, you know, full pitch, like there was full houses at NBA games. And I know my daughter was at University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill, and they had the basketball going, and it was March Madness. And then it all sort of suddenly just stopped quite dramatically. And it's hard to even get your head around this short period of time that has moved that quickly. And it's, you know, now with New York, it's really a ghost town. There's, you know, cases springing up everywhere, and it's just been really hard to keep the lid on the whole thing.
Yeah, it's been incredible, hasn't it? The tsunami that has engulfed the world. And I guess in another 3 or 4 weeks, we're going to know just how quickly it looks like abating. Let's hope it's quicker than we think. But it's absolutely had a major impact on the tennis world, your world. And it probably first reared its head when the French Open went rogue.
Well, the step before that, Jared, was really when Indian Wells cancelled.
And
that
right,
was
yep.
at the time, which was only now, I mean, right now that would have only been played, it would have finished only 10 days ago. So that's how long this is. And there was one case in Palm Springs, and they called it off, and everyone sort of, how did they, you know, couldn't they have, you know, done it? And now look at the decision. And the sad thing for tennis, I mean, look, there's so many aspects at different levels of tennis, not but just for the professional level for the moment. It was coming into such a great time. You know, you have Palm Springs into Miami, and then clay court season starts, Monte Carlo, Barcelona, Rome, Madrid, and all these great cities. And now these tournaments can't showcase the sport, and the players have nothing to play. And with so many of the players being European, you know, you've got about 80% of them just who are literally trapped in their houses at the moment. So it's just massive impact on the game. And then the difficult thing is, well, as you alluded to, like the we're waiting on the announcement from Wimbledon, which seems, you know, inevitable, that it'll be cancelled. And then that'll be another chain reaction. And it's hard to adjust to when the circuit will actually resume, if at all, this year.
So, Peter, if the circuit doesn't resume this year, what impact do you think that'll have on the current greats that we have who are at the other end of their careers, the Federers and the Nadals in particular? I mean, does it spell more of they get closer to the end because they simply won't be able to get back to the level, or is it a great opportunity for players like that to rest and reset?
Well, Sam, you know, it's probably both. It probably depends on a case by case. You know, you think of Federer, incredibly, he was going to be off this time of the year anyway because he was recovering from a small op on the knee. And then now, so he's had the chance to actually sort of freshen up and get himself right. You know, it can work both ways. We think of Djokovic, he was playing, he hasn't lost this year, I don't think. You know, just playing incredible tennis, set to probably be favourite going into the next Grand Slams, even, you know, and Rafa's been playing amazing, and could he get his next French Open? All these things are up in the air, and of course they all get the chance to rest. But the hard thing is, how does your body respond after that? And you know, I think that one thing's for sure with all these guys and the girls, I'm sorry to think of Ash Barty, you know, like defending the French Open, she's the number one player in the world, and now it's all on hold. You know, it's going to be a question of how they're able to manage their sort of their preparation, and then also, this uncertainty about when we'll resume. And then the other part, Sam, is what will the calendar look like? Because, you know, we have the announcement of the French unilaterally deciding actually to go into the post-US Open period. If that stood up and everyone was playing, you'd have the US Open, 1 week break, and then the French Open. So, so many dynamics. It's hard to actually then say, well, how would each player perform in that environment?
So the French Open went rogue. They didn't consult all the other members of the ITF, for memory. They run the big four. So the US Open would be fairly annoyed that they weren't consulted on the change of date, surely.
Oh, yeah, I think everyone outside of the French Open was annoyed, Jared, really. And one just small correction. It's the ITF doesn't actually run the slams. Like, this is the thing. The slams have their own sort of sovereignty. And so they are brought together by, I guess there's a Grand Slam committee which creates Grand Slam rules, etc. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, they can create kind of their own system. But having said that, you're living in a community where there is other stakeholders that it's all give and take. So, I mean, the ramifications of the French moving a week after, like 1 week break, and then 1 week break from the US Open. Even from myself, I do two tournaments, one St. Petersburg in the US, in Russia, one in Zhuhai in China. They're both those 2 weeks. So we're now waiting a little bit for what is the ATP's response to that. And then, you know, so it's just massive impact by them making a decision really without any full consultation. It was more that they informed these other bodies, is how I understand it.
They told them. They told everybody to go and get stuffed. We're playing it when we want to play it. Play a Viva La French Open and up you, Jack, was basically the message there.
Gee.
Can I ask you, essentially, Jono, why don't we just move the tennis world to Russia? Because Russia seems to be the only country in the world right now that hasn't got an issue with coronavirus.
Well, Russia is travelling well as far as the numbers. Yeah, that's for sure. But this is the other really difficult thing for tennis, as we know. Because it's global, you can't really run a tournament unless all cases in which every country is clear, if you like. Because if we're running, say, the tournament in St. Petersburg, but players from Italy, players from Spain can't play, for example, then it's an unfair playing field. And so the tours won't really embrace that, because the tours have to be fair to all players of all nationalities to give everyone a level playing field for the ranking points. So that's what's going to really hold tennis up in terms of resuming, because really everything has to be clear globally, not just domestically.
Well, it was a serious answer to a less than serious question, but it actually made sense, and it gives us an insight into just how difficult it's going to be to kickstart the game. I mean, right now, tennis players locked in Australia can't even fly out of the country. So and we know that Alex Dimona, he is in super lockdown over in Spain. So there's lots and lots of issues. And do you see tennis being played at all this year?
Well, look, I'm optimistic, but as I said, it becomes a more difficult situation. You know, I'm obviously following what's happening with the footy and the domestic codes here. I think it's just compounded. The delay is going to be compounded because it has to be an international sort of clearance, if you like. So that's what's going to make it hard. Having said it, Jared, I think the tours can potentially play right up to December.
Yeah.
I don't think it needs to be the cutoff where the London finals in the first week of November and the WTA finals at the end of October. That doesn't have to be the drop-dead time. You can extend it out. There's a lot of reshuffling need to be done, but you could actually play up to then, which gives you a little more hope.
Jono, we know that you're going to be joining us on a regular basis. I'm looking forward to your top 10 tennis matches that you have ever seen played coming up this time next week. Great to have you back in the country, and hope your family stay well.
Thanks, Jared. Thanks, Sam.
Cheers, Jono. Peter Johnson there. Jared, you're talking about Russia. So I think Russia was fine until the weekend.
Right.
And then they had an influx.
Did they? I didn't pick that up.
No. Well, I was with you. I was wondering, why hasn't it got to Russia yet? Because I mean, Russia and China are obviously very close together.
Indeed.
Well,
it hasn't even got to Shanghai. Not one person's been killed in Shanghai or
is that
died
right?
in Shanghai, according to somebody I spoke to today. Now, I'll double check
true.
That. Well, the whole numbers in China are unbelievable. Now, I'm not saying they're unbelievable.
I'm saying they're unbelievable.
But they're unbelievable.
I'm saying they're unbelievable.
That was all for AustralianMate.com.au/apply is where you can find it. That's it for us for tonight. It's another big day in sport when there is no sport being played. We do appreciate Gil McLaughlin joining us in the first hour.
He was good.
He was strong. He's been incredibly strong right throughout. But this is Sports Day for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home, and that's where we're going. Good night, folks.